Let a trained colorizer salesperson help you choose the correct color quickly in Jewel Colorizer Paints, now the Bacon and Van Busker Glass Company, 719 South Neal, Champaign. Illinois defeated Michigan in baseball today, 3-2.
Now, Edward R. Murrow and the voices of General Douglas MacArthur, President Harry Truman, Vice President Barkley, Senator Arthur Vandenberg, Winston Churchill, Speaker Sam Rayburn, Joe DiMaggio, Honus Wagner, Connie Mack, and more than 40 other men and women in the news in the 19th performance of Hear It Now, presented tonight and every week at this time.
From a military standpoint, the above views have been fully shared in past by practically every military leader, including our own Joint Chiefs of Staff. Rogue soldiers never die. They just fade away. And like the old soldier of that ballad, I now close my military career and just fade away.
It took 5 years to take the world apart. It would not be surprising if it took at least that long to put it together again.
Hear It Now. The Columbia Broadcasting System and 173 affiliated radio stations present a document for air based on the week's news and the men and women who made it. All the voices and sounds you will hear are real and are presented as they were recorded in the heat and confusion of a world in crisis. Here is the editor of Hear It Now, the distinguished reporter and news analyst, Edward R. Murrow.
This week, like last week, the United States existed in a supercharged atmosphere of tension and dynamics. But these 7 days, unlike last week's, had a climax, which Americans would remember for generations. This was a week of history.
Members of the Congress, I deem it a high privilege, and I take great pleasure in presenting to you General of the Army, Douglas MacArthur.
The sound you hear is the Congress of the United States, 1,500 visitors, guests, and members of both the House and Senate, as they stood and cheered one of the most successful generals of all time, and undoubtedly the most controversial general of his day. The verdict on MacArthur, the military leader, is not for debate. His stature and place in history are assured. But this week, the general, dismissed but not dishonored, came home to place his views on global strategy before the bar of public opinion. The stirring pronouncement of his doctrine to the Congress, to the public, and to the world was his first opportunity in 14 years to reach more than a handful of his countrymen at one time. His speech was a vital pronouncement and document, which was the climax of this week of news. We shall try to tell it as it happened, attempt to review the drama and international significance of these last 7 crowded days.
I have been in contact with Tokyo and have found out General MacArthur would be delighted to accept an invitation to come to Washington and speak before the members of Congress.
By Saturday of last week, the initial shock was over. MacArthur was out as Supreme Commander in the Pacific. No one seriously challenged the president's constitutional right to remove him. Mr. Truman's judgment and method was a matter of severe criticism by many and approval by some. But as the week began, even that dissent was dwarfed by the fact that one of America's great heroes was coming home. The excitement was enough to chase even the Kefauver Committee and the RFC hearings off the front page. On Sunday, the general left his home at the embassy in Tokyo for the last time. Personally shook hands with each of the servants, rode through shouting, adoring crowds on the route to Haneda Airport, where against a background of a 19-gun salute, hundreds of thousands of Japanese stood bareheaded to wave goodbye to the man who had conquered them.
General and Mrs. MacArthur, they're standing on the steps waving goodbye to the crowd below. The general is now inside the plane. The door has been closed, partially closed, now it's fully closed, and the air police are pulling the stairs away from the side of the plane. The band has broken into the strains of Auld Lang Syne. Perhaps you can hear it.
The Bataan, a Constellation four-engine aircraft, circled Tokyo Bay, started the 8,000-mile journey home, bringing Douglas and Gene MacArthur for the first time since 1937. Their 13-year-old son, Arthur, for the first time ever. Back on the mainland, as the islanders call the U.S., Sunday is Saturday. And Saturday was the evening of the Jefferson-Jackson Day dinner for the Democrats. In Washington, 5,300 of them gathered in a political jamboree at $100 a plate to cheer their leader facing the toughest challenge of his life.
Our present president of the United States is more like Andrew Jackson than any man has lived since his day.
That was Speaker Sam Rayburn, who on Thursday would introduce MacArthur in the Congress. And Vice President Barclay even went so far as to defend the president's letter-writing habits.
They say that our president is a human being, and so he is. They say that under the tense and taut tensions of the day in which we live, that now and then he has given expression to words that you might not have used, or that I might not have used. So be it. What of it? These are but the superficial excrescences that follow universal frailty of human nature.
President Truman, with what could be one of the most trying weeks of his administration ahead of him, spoke too. He said, some people are playing petty politics with the future of the country. And without mentioning any names, said this about his political opponents.
They say they want other free nations to resist aggression, but they don't want us to send any troops to help our friends and allies. They want us to get out of Korea, but they urge us to wage an aggressive war against China. Now beat that one if you can. They say it will provoke Russia to attack if we send troops to Europe. But they are sure Russia won't be provoked if we carry the war to China. It has been categorically stated that Russia will not come in if we bomb Manchuria. That statement was made to me about the Chinese not coming into Korea. And it was made on good authority, too, and I believed it.
As the Bataan moved across the Pacific toward Hawaii, the president's opposition went into action. Republican Senator Harry P. Kane of the state of Washington asked for a declaration of war.
I think because of what the president said last week, that there is good and sound reason on Tuesday of next week, which is after the weekend is over and a lot of people have thought about it, for a resolution to be offered in the Senate of the United States declaring war in Korea against all of the enemies of the United Nations fighting either in Korea or using contiguous and adjacent territories from which to launch attacks.
The senator did introduce his war resolution, but he too had weekend thoughts. He introduced a second resolution calling on the government to pull the troops out of Korea if we weren't going to make it a bigger war. The Republican Party offered him scant support. While the debate continued, General MacArthur reached Hawaii. He had been as far east as Hawaii once before in recent years, in 1945, to meet Franklin Roosevelt. But this had been a guarded wartime meeting. This time, the citizens of Honolulu turned out to cheer him and wish him well. The next stop, the mainland and home. In San Francisco, on the 45th anniversary of the famous earthquake that a young Lieutenant MacArthur had helped to fight, the city extended the most spectacular and largest welcome in its history. Standing beside the Bataan in a cool night, pinpointed by a giant spotlight and the television lights, the general said thank you for the tumultuous welcome.
I can't tell you how good it is to be home. Yeah. A long, long, dreary years, Mrs. MacArthur and myself have talked and thought about this moment. But now that it's come, the marvelous hospitality and the wonderful reception that this great city has given us has made it seem even more delightful than we had anticipated. Thanks, we'll not forget it.
The next day, after a triumphant motorcade through the city, the general spoke of himself and politics.
I have no political aspirations whatsoever. I do not intend to run for any political office, and I hope that my name will never be used in a political way. The only politics I have is contained in a simple phrase known well by all of you. God bless America.
On Wednesday afternoon, the Bataan lifted itself from the San Francisco runway, bound for Washington. In Washington, President Truman, originally scheduled to speak 1 hour after the general on Thursday, canceled the address, saying it was MacArthur's day. And although he would not attend the joint meetings of Congress, he did not wish to detract. If Mr. Truman did not wish to attend, he was just about the only one in Washington. Fishbait Miller, the doorkeeper of the House and custodian of its cherished seats, was besieged with requests. Here, Mr. Miller reports on his problem.
We sure having a time here in Washington. Our office has been a really and a humdum down there. Didn't know I had so many friends. Then this morning, I find out that MacArthur has too many kinfolks, that I don't know where I'm going to put them. There are not that many places left. In fact, there are not any left. Not any to start off with. But we mustn't forget our members of Congress. They only get one ticket each.
The prospect of Douglas MacArthur addressing Congress far outshadowed anything that was said in either house all week. On Wednesday afternoon, the Bataan left San Francisco. 8 hours later, the general was back in Washington.
That noise of engines which you hear are the engines of the Bataan bringing General MacArthur to Washington. It's wheeling up right in front of us now, the floodlights on it, faces in the windows, one can't tell which. The door is open and one of the members of the crew is standing there, waiting for the landing steps to be rolled up. There comes Mrs. MacArthur. A big crowd, a big cheer goes up from the crowd behind General MacArthur. Neat and military in a trench coat.
Mr. Truman designated his military aide, General Vaughn, to represent him at the arrival. And some of MacArthur's old colleagues, now Washington's top military men, were there, including Generals Bradley, Vandenberg, Collins, and Secretary of Defense George Marshall, whom you hear now.
Speaking for the Defense Department, the Army, and the Navy, the Air Corps, and the Marines, my privilege to welcome General MacArthur back after a great many years and after a magnificent campaign from New Guinea up to Japan.
Republican Congressman Joe Martin, whose release of the MacArthur letter on Formosa and China caused the recall, was there, as were other prominent Republicans. That night, the MacArthur slept at the Statler. It had not even been built in 1937 when the general lived in Washington as chief of staff. The MacArthur schedule moved as swiftly as welcoming officials and wildly enthusiastic crowds would permit. At 1 minute before 12:30, the general entered the ancient American Forum. Magnificently, he strode down the right aisle, across the front row, past his old comrade, General Wainwright, and his young son, Arthur, to the rostrum, there to shake the hands of Speaker Rayburn and Vice President Barclay. A tense moment of reflection as he surveyed the cheering audience. A knowing nod in the direction of Mrs. MacArthur in the first row of the balcony, and then the traditional introduction from the speaker, who has introduced so many of the history-making orations since Pearl Harbor.
Members of the Congress, I deem it a high privilege, and I take great pleasure in presenting to you General of the Army, Douglas MacArthur.
And out across the country, in our cities and towns, the nation held its collective breath. Subways in New York were deserted, stores in Chicago empty, taxis in St. Louis parked and listening. Had it been for just MacArthur, the victorious warrior, all this would have been his due, and rightly so. But returning as a displaced commander, he stood there before the Congress and the nation, a symbol of their own dissidence and disunity.
I stand on this rostrum with a sense of deep humility and great pride. Here are centered the hopes and aspirations and faith of the entire human race. I do not stand here as advocate for any partisan cause, for the issues are fundamental and reach quite beyond the realm of partisan consideration.